Good evening and welcome to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. You can also go to the website at www.guardiantalkradio.com where you can stream live and also listen to archive shows. Now, if you have a smartphone, you can also download the Guardian Radio app, which you can get from the App Store or the Play Store, and have that on your phone all the time. So tonight, I think we're going to have a really interesting show. We have four visitors with us in the studio tonight, and what I wanted to speak about, I was privileged enough to be invited to the day, charter day of the University of the Bahamas. And as I was looking around at all the flags and listening to all the music, I really thought about how we create institutions through the use of visual and performing arts, musical arts, and how important that is, and how important it was for that day and for moving into the sort of future of the University of the Bahamas to have these creative people forming the way the university will be perceived. So I have four people in the studio with me tonight. I'd like to first welcome Nikki Saddleton, who's the Vice President of Communication for Tegra Solutions. Evening, Nikki.
Evening, Amanda.
And I've also got Keisha Oliver, hasn't got a mic yet, but she's going to say good evening anyway, who is the Assistant Professor and Program Coordinator of Visual Arts at the University of the Bahamas. We have return visitor, well, Keisha's also been on this before, Chris Justillian, the Head of Visual and Performing Arts and an Assistant Professor at the University of the Bahamas.
Good morning. Good evening.
Good evening. We're taping in the morning. It's a bit of a trick. It's a bit of a time warp thing. You've got to imagine the tiredness you feel now is an end of day tiredness and not a first thing in the morning tiredness. And we have Andret John, who's a visual artist who's also been on the show before. Good evening, Andret.
Good evening, Bahamas.
So we have everyone here. I'm going to start with Nikki, because the first thing, I'm going to call you by your Christian name, I hope that's fine.
That's fine with me. Amanda.
To talk about the brand of the University of the Bahamas. So you are at Tegra Solutions, and you worked on several, you've actually even did the Guardian Radio brand.
I did the Guardian Radio brand and Printmasters.
Oh, okay, so you're familiar with this building.
Very much so.
And so the University of the Bahamas brand is a shield, with the initials UB on top of an open book, or the sort of silhouette of an open book, and the flamingo. And it's somehow playing with the original brand, which I now can't find in my magazine, but which had the flamingo standing on an open book. So tell me a little bit about, and you picked a particular color, so I'd really like to just hear about the birth of that brand and how, you know, what it meant for you and the conversations that were had around the table in discussing like what that vision would be for the university.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show.
My pleasure.
And it's really great to be able to talk about the university brand, because it's been a long time in the making. As you know, the university transition has been on the table for many, many years through many presidents, not to mention Dr. Kevin Bethel, mm-hmm. who was one of the original founders, the original visionary for the university. And she was very instrumental and worked closely with us in protecting this vision of what the national symbol should be to represent such a prestigious and important, significant organization. We were engaged by them, must be 6-7 years ago, I think. Mm-hmm. And we were part of a bid to work on the brand, and luckily for us, we won the bid. And we then proceeded with about a 3 to 6 month research period, which is so important in developing any kind mm-hmm. of brand.
And that is what, sort of going out and speaking to students and professors?
Well, we realized
the public, or what
huge honor to be awarded this contract and mm-hmm. the national significance this would have moving forward. So we felt we took every due diligence possible, and the college was very instrumental with us in ensuring that many stakeholders were represented in the discussion. So we did three levels of research. We did one-on-one interviews with major stakeholders like Dr. Kevin Bethel herself, the president, the different alumni who were critical to the relationship at the college at the time, people like Dr. Linda Davis. So we had a lot of top-level opinion on their experience, their history, their heritage. We wanted to make sure everything was kind of thrown in the pot, mm-hmm. if you like. We also did group focus groups, and we had faculty, we had students, we had all different representatives from all different aspects of the college.
And faculty from all areas or mostly from the visual
all
arts?
All areas, because we wanted to make sure everyone, sports and culinary and everybody, we wanted to make sure everybody was represented. And then we also did an online survey. And the online survey was the thing that came out of the discussions where we talked about what aspects of the COB heritage, culture, branding, symbolism do we want to preserve, respect and honor, and then put into the new brand. So it was it had to do a lot, this logo. It really had to work hard. It really had to be a natural transition from all the brilliance and all the good work that had already been, but it also had to be something new and fresh and modern and relevant for today.
And what fresh and modern, but also something that would last. I think that's always the problem
something
with doing things
lasting,
that are too contemporary, too of the time, means that in 100 years it's going to look awful.
Absolutely.
Did you look at other university brands?
The amount of work we did was incredible. And a shout out to my ex-business partner, Brian Gowdy, because he dedicated 3 months of that time collecting university information from all of the universities in North America. And we literally had two giant Bibles of every aspect of those universities, from their actual logo to their crest to their seal to their motto to their entire branding elements. And we went through that daily, because our ultimate goal was to not only represent the country, but to also make sure we were not only on par with other universities of excellence, but even higher if possible. I mean, we wanted to kind of aim high with this logo.
Well, what I like about it is it's very clean. So when I look at the old COB logo, it was always a little busy and had a lot of different colors and a lot of letters and a lot of text, and it was a bit. So was that
it had to be simple.
Was that
any modern aesthetic should be clean and simple. Yeah. I mean, if you try to say too much ever in a brand, you lose people. The graphic element, that's what a graphic is to instantly communicate what you're trying to say.
Now, what about the color? Because I think that's, I think everyone expects the Bahamas to be turquoise, pink, or yellow.
Well, I have to
and
say
I thought it was an interesting choice to go with this kind
of,
what the technical word is, it's sort of a royal blue. Keisha had an awesome suit on the charter day that was this electric blue that just, what about the color? What was the...
I will actually hand over to Keisha for the color, because I can't take credit for the color. The original design was our company's, and there was a stalling process before Dr. Smith came on and took the helm and really championed the university and how this brand should be developed. So I'm really, really proud of the symbols and the way they were put together, but I really like the way Dr. Smith has come in and made the color. And I'm, from what I understand, Keisha, I could be wrong, but I think Dr. Smith had a very strong preference on the color.
Good evening. Yes, the color, so as you would have said, the color, I think, that was initially proposed by Calmer, Tegra Solutions, was a combination of blacks and reds. And during my time of transition between being a graphic designer with the institution and then transitioning into teaching, I was a part of the UB branding committee, and we decided that we wanted to readdress the colors that were used because our focus, like you said, it came just before President Smith's time with us. We wanted something that was even more simplified and something was more tightly knit to what we see as being Bahamian, and those colors, the black and red, really didn't speak to that. And I think we can all kind of agree to that. And so even though the blue doesn't necessarily speak of an aquamarine sort of waters, this blue, which is in between a royal and cobalt blue, it speaks about strength and this resilience of the people, but with a little bit of refinement and sophistication, as opposed to choosing the typical aquamarine that is displayed in the flag. So it has this autonomy. It doesn't have this tight-knit association with the Bahamian flag, as it were. And so I think in that, the blue was chosen and selected when President Smith came in as a definite color that we would move forward with.
Well, I don't know. I have to say that it's an easier color to wear. Because sometimes, not everyone looks awesome in yellow and turquoise. Some people do, but I think that's a sort of seems
it
look, like
a, it looks good on everyone.
Seems like a flippant thing to say, but no. But like on Charter Day again, like everyone was, you know, absolutely. And it really was a color that somehow really it was strong and held together. And absolutely. And so I'm just going to quickly turn to Andre because he's also part of the visual in a different way. We're not totally done with you, but just want to bring you into the conversation because you designed the mace. So there's all these different symbols. There's the brand, and you have the seal, and I haven't actually seen the seal, so I don't know what's on it. Maybe you can speak to that. You were commissioned to design the mace. Tell me a little bit about what is the mace? Like, what do we, you know?
Well,
I mean, I know what it is literally, yeah, but yeah. I would imagine you had to do some research on the sort of point of it and the symbolism.
Not necessarily. I think the work was basically done by those who mm-hmm. went before. They have a mace already. Okay. COB had mm-hmm. a mace, so.
And does that come from like royalty? The whole idea of a mace, yeah, the scepter, well, and the orb, is that the history of it?
Yeah, it is a bit historic in value in terms mm-hmm. of it came from ancient Egypt.
Okay,
basically.
Oh, sure. You know, the two
exactly,
right, yeah.
And then it just passed on. You know, got into mm-hmm. Europe and yada yada. But with me understanding those things and then seeing the mace that they had before, it just seemed very generic and. You know, after I saw the original mace. Mm-hmm. So I really have to give a shout out to Malin Seymour Major. Mm-hmm. You know, she was the one that kind of directed mm-hmm. exactly what should happen. When I saw the original mace, you know, I said, hey, you know, it just was kind of painted mahogany. Mm-hmm. You know, so I had done a lot of work in wood before. So
I mean, that's really what you're known for. Really.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
I know now
exactly.
you use other materials, right, but your wood carving and your sculptures.
Yeah, that was the genesis. Yeah. So I really like the way that wood has character, and you shouldn't really kind of hide that with a color. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of use the natural mm-hmm. veins and everything that already exists in the natural hardwoods of the mm-hmm. Bahamas. So I was like, hey, I'm going to use a piece of mahogany. And
so
guess
you
used
mahogany?
Yeah, and then okay. Matthew came along, mm-hmm. which was good.
So, our friend, Matthew.
Right, you know, so yes. there was a
so you suddenly
lining.
Had lots of trees to
yes,
use.
Yes, and,
right,
and it was one day I was driving along, it was the highway, you know, and I saw this beautiful piece of tree. It was a Madeira bark, we call it, but it's mahogany. So I saw it and I said, oh my God. And it was already dried, mm-hmm. you know? So I was like, that would be perfect. So I got the guys, you know, we cut a nice length of it. And you may not believe, it's just amazing how things work. I left my measuring tape at home that day. Mm-hmm. So I went and I told the guy, I said, cut here and here. And I already said that I wanted to be 3 feet long. And I don't know if it's just, you know, whatever, but when
fate.
I took it home, it was exactly 3 feet.
Wow, that's fate.
I'm serious. And I was like, wow. Like, I didn't have
that's
the time
amazing.
To really
yeah.
do that over again. But it just added to the whole euphoria of everything that was going on. And like I said, the work was already done.
Yeah.
So I just kind of, you know, bounced off of what these guys had already done.
Yeah.
And came up with a design.
We're going to go to a very quick break, but I'd like to talk more about it because, again, yeah, I'd love you to describe it for the audience. I was able to see it from far away, but I think it would be interesting to talk about all the, you know, the detail in that. And actually, Keisha, you wrote a very interesting article in The Guardian about artwork that was created as a result of the hurricanes. So it's kind of like an interesting tie-in there, that this kind of act of God somehow created a sort of tabula rasa for artists to take on. I think that's interesting. So thanks for sharing that with Andret. I have four guests in the studio with me tonight. You just heard from Andret John, who's a visual artist, who was responsible for creating the mace, which I'm not totally sure what it symbolizes, but it symbolizes the power of the president of the University of the Bahamas. We are talking about how visual and musical and creative arts are brought into the formation of an institution and how important that is and how without those things there isn't the sort of foundation really to build on of the institution. We heard also from Nikki Saddleton, who's the Vice President of Communications for Tegra Solutions, who did the graphic design. We heard from Keisha Oliver, the Assistant Professor and Program Coordinator of the Visual Arts at the University of the Bahamas, who is part of the team also working on the brand. And after the break, we'll be hearing from Chris Justillian, Head of Visual and Performing Arts and Assistant Professor at University of the Bahamas. And we're going to be hearing the alma mater, and I shall read out the words, which are a poem that Chris wrote. And I want to thank everyone for being in. We're going to get a quick break and we're going to continue with the discussion about using visual and creative arts to form institutions. You are listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after this break. Welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget, we also have a Facebook page at facebook.com/NAG Blank Canvas. That is capital N, capital A, capital G, capital B, Blank Canvas. So there are not two Bs. And then you can go and you can look at our pictures and you can thumbs up and leave comments if you like. We were just talking before the break to Andrette John, who's a visual artist who created the mace for the College of the University of the Bahamas. I knew I'd say it.
Yes.
I said, I'm going to say College of the Bahamas. I'm going to say COB, University of the Bahamas. And the whole show is about how the visual arts and musical arts and creative arts are so important in forming our national institutions and things that people don't really think about, which is why I wanted to have a conversation about it. Because without those symbols and colors and images. I mean, images are such forceful things. In fact, talking of maces, Andrette, I've always said that the statue of Lyndon Pindling should not be static. It should actually be someone chucking the mace out the window, right? Something really sort of, with movement and a moment of history, right? I find these statues of people standing there in suits like really so uninspiring.
Interesting.
To do something with movement that really creates a historic moment. So maces are something important in our history. We all know about the mace being chucked out the window in Parliament Square. So let's continue talking about the mace. So you found this piece of wood, which happened to be
perfect.
Knocked down, perfect.
Yeah, knocked down by Matthew.
Which Matthew knocked
so generously
down for you. Generously. Because no one else would want to chop down a tree for you, I'm
exactly.
sure. It turned out to exactly be 3 feet long.
Yes.
Were you given specific instructions as to how heavy it should be? Because, I mean, someone's got to carry that, right?
Not really.
Or not really. Is it just there?
Yeah, it was kind of, like I said, they already have one.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a guiding light. But just a strange kind of a tidbit, a storyline other than that. When I was asked to do it, we came up with these drawings, mm-hmm. and I did like this wonderful conch shell, you know,
mm-hmm.
and everything for the head of the mace. And mm-hmm. then I got a call from Malin, and she was like, well, you know, it's a flamingo that, you know, so I was like,
the conch shell's actually not our logo.
Right, you know, and I was like, okay, and I love conch shells. But so I was like, okay, so let me see the emblem. Let me see what you're working with. So when I saw it, I was like, oh, wow.
So you were shared then the brand that Nikki.
Exactly.
Okay.
So Nikki had done all of my work for me.
Okay, thank you,
know?
Nikki.
Yes, I have to thank Nikki.
You're welcome.
So I the parameters had already been set.
Yeah.
So I just had to keep it very streamlined, very clean. And then also something that could withstand time, you know,
right.
if it fell or, you know, so all of these design elements were kind of incorporated in the thinking.
Yeah.
So, but the work had already been done.
Mm-hmm.
I just had to execute.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up with two designs.
I think, does anyone here think he's shortchanging himself a little bit?
No, not really.
Little bit?
Not really. No, see, the thing is with art, with me, my psychology, it's visual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's very little that I want to do in terms of explaining what it is.
Right, sure.
Right, I want you to see it. I want you to look at it and derive what you perceive. You know, it's kind of that sharing experience.
Yeah, but
that
I think
there's
something. I mean, what I mean by a shortchanging yourself is even with the logo being made, I think there is. I mean, all artists are influenced by other visual things
definitely,
they see or feelings
definitely.
They see, but it's still somehow goes through your brain and your heart and is processed in such a way, and then you then create something new, which might be inspired by, but you wouldn't be an artist if you were just copying something that had already been done. So I think you bring something of yourself to that process.
Oh, definitely.
And I think that's what makes it art. No?
I just had one quick, I was curious about one thing. So I think Amanda had asked in the previously, if you'd been able to describe it. And I'm quite curious, you know, we look at the logo, which is essentially a shield that is a combination of an open book and the flamingo to the bottom. And it, like we said, it honors the COB logo that preceded, it honors elements from that. But could you kind of describe, because I remember seeing the mace and it's like a little bit of the flamingo, I think, in, you know, integrated. I really want you to explain that. So, you know,
definitely, definitely. Well, what it was to have to take that actual 2D image and make it three-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to wrap my mind around how do I do that, and also incorporating the things that I spoke of before, like making it sturdy, which was definitely a concern. So what it is actually two flamingos that kind of drape around a globe, and then they kind of wrap their bodies wrap around. So if you were to look at it, it looks 2D, but you'll have to really spin it and see the 3D elements of it, you know? So I wanted to kind of, you know, be tricky, but yet clean. And but basically the work was already done. I just had to like kind of pull it out, you know? But you, one has to see it, I guess, some really nice photos, you know, and you'd get an idea as to, you know, the execution.
But I really like the concept, what this university, the way that all these artisans and musicians have had to come together to interpret something. And I really love the fact, I mean, that flamingo was created on a computer screen, and I love that you've actually carved it.
Right, exactly.
You know, so you've transition.
Body, you literally brought body to it.
Yeah. Keisha and I have both lived the vector elements of that flamingo on many, many levels.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then obviously Andret's carved it, and then I think even Jessica from Jessica Tile Works produced a ceramic plate, so she has also carved.
Wish I'd known, I would have had her on the show too.
She's also carved and produced something of value with the same symbols.
Well, again, I think it's so interesting. There's the really seal as well, right? So there's all these different objects.
Important. Symbols are so important. Yeah. They're so relevant to helping people identify. Mm. And I think what we all were trying to achieve, and I know Chris and I spoke earlier, it's a sense of pride.
Yeah.
And that's the ultimate goal, is to make sure that, and it's all about the students really at the end of the day, as much as the faculty and alum and everybody engaged, the students have to wear this logo and they have to feel that connection, that emotional connection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think the sense of pride then comes also out of the alma mater. So Chris, finally, it's your turn. Chris has been so quiet. But we're going to wrap you in now. I'm going to read the University of the Bahamas alma mater. Someone asked me this morning, what's an alma mater? So that is the hymn. It's basically the university hymn, which most universities have. And Chris, you were commissioned or asked to write the University of the Bahamas alma mater. We're going to play it before we go to the break, but I'm just going to read the text. So this is 216, Christian Justilian. We've come to build together a dream for this great land, like palm trees tall upon this landfall called Bahamaland. The future is before us like endless sea and sand. We'll chart a course with alma mater proudly. We will stand. A beacon for these islands embraced in shallow seas, UB will lift our spirits high for all the world to see. With hands and hearts together, we'll be a guiding light. We'll live to praise our alma mater neath the clear blue skies. We'll live to raise our alma mater's banner, waving high. Lovely, really beautiful. Now, it's on the sort of little booklet we got from on the charter day. It is printed on the same page as the national anthem and the pledge. And I think listeners can hear, and Chris, how much did you think about that there is there is a bonding there between, you know, your specific use of words, definitely, like the banners and the, you know, definitely there's kind of an echo. Can you talk a little bit about how you, you know, approach this? I mean, this is a really, they're going to be singing this in 200 years, so that's something.
Well, like Nikki, I had to do a bit of research as well. I was fortunate to have been written the first alma mater for COB, and that was well over 20 years ago. And the same considerations were given because I had done this before. I wanted to write something, first of all, that was streamlined and simple, because we're talking about students that may be coming upon graduation from the university who may have one, maybe two rehearsals before singing this at their passing out of the university. It had to be simple. It had to be meaningful. The melody had to be very catchy, not like a pop song kind of catchy, but almost like a hymn type of catchy. And the words had to be something that, that resonated their experience. And I think I was able to do that. And I think it's a combination of both, I guess, inspiration and training that comes together, same as all of our other artists. You know, once you have the training in a particular area, you know, it's just a matter of making it happen. The music was quite, it came to me quite interestingly. I was very fortunate to receive a call from Malin as well. She said that a process had begun with selecting the alma mater for the university, and a decision was made to invite me to submit again. And I gladly accepted the opportunity,
challenge.
The challenge. And on the way home, this music came to me. I mean, I left her office, and as soon as I stepped out of the door, this music came to me. And I think because I'm in the unique position of being at the university for all these years, for nearly 20 years now.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Yes, it's it had a personal touch to it.
Mm-hmm.
We've been through many transitions over the years with as many presidents and as many experiences, and also the perception that the general public may have about the college at the time. And over the years, you know, it's not been the best all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We want to, I think in all areas of the art, want to present a fresh outlook, because there has been so many wonderful things that's
blank
coming.
Blank canvas, clean
so
slate,
many, yes,
right?
So many things that's been coming out. So if you listen to the beginning of the song, first of all, it's this whirlwind of music. It's just this aggressive sound that really... I was thinking about the Glass Window Bridge.
One of my favorite spots.
At the beginning of the piece, it's like looking on the north side, where it's totally rough.
Yeah, there's waves crashing up.
You know, this aggressive sound, and you look right across the way, and there's this calm right next door. So the music really, it represented, the introduction was the rough side that we're leaving. And then the vocals and the words came in, and the music just settled down into almost like the shallow seas. Okay, this is where I want to be. And I tried to capture that in the music, and I think it worked well.
Yeah, I want to be on the calm side. I think it was beautiful. And I think you spoke to that at the beginning, which is you want to write something which is not too complicated. And I think really great hymns, you know, sometimes you go to someone else's church or and suddenly, you know, you got to sing along, but you actually don't know that one yet.
Right.
And there's some that are just done so well that you can join in after just a couple of lines. You're like, okay, I've got this. I understand where this melody's going. And, you know, and I felt that with the alma mater. I'd never heard it before. We're all standing there. And he sort of felt like, oh yeah, okay, I can, like, you know, I'll join in. I'll join in this. He had all the words up, and but so I thought it definitely was very successful from that point too.
And in addition to that, I had a great opportunity to test it.
Mm-hmm.
I have a studio at home. I invited some of the music students, about five or six of them, on a Saturday morning, to come and just sing it, so we could do a demo of it.
Mm-hmm.
And this was kind of in the early stages. So what you're going to hear is the demo that we did.
Great, okay.
For the submission. There's a little tweaking that was done following that submission.
Mm-hmm.
But the integrity of what was happening in the studio, I think, would be good for persons to hear.
Okay, well, we'll go right into that then. So we will now hear the rough cut of the University of the Bahamas Alma Mater by Christian Justilian. So there we are. Absolutely wonderful. And Christian, we have to thank you for that. We are now going to quickly go to a short break, and we will continue afterwards to speak about all these different things we've been discussing, the mace, the branding. Now we'd like to also speak to about the position the arts are going to have within the university, and the music, which I think are all slowly building up. They're all these sort of foundation stones, and you said it very nicely, Chris. It's kind of like a clean slate, so we've now got a kind of fresh start. start with these really strong symbols and these really beautiful things to build on for the University of the Bahamas. So in the studio with me tonight, we just heard from Christian Justilian, who is the head of visual and performing arts and the assistant and an assistant professor at the University of the Bahamas. Before him, we were speaking to Andret John, a visual artist who was responsible for creating the mace, which was a riff of a three-dimensional riff off the brand created by Nikki Saddleton, who is the Vice President of Communications for Tegra Solutions. And we also heard from Keisha Oliver, an assistant professor and program coordinator of visual arts at the University of the Bahamas. And we'll hear more from her and all the other guests after the break. You're listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after this break. Welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget, you can also go to the website, www.guardiantalkradio.com, where you can hit that live stream button, and you can live stream us from your computer. And of course, you can also download the app and put it on your phone, and then you can just, if you have a data plan, which I don't, but I'm getting one soon, you can listen to Guardian Radio whenever you're walking around with your phone. So we have four visitors in the studio tonight. We've been speaking about not just branding. I think it's deeper than that, right? I think it's kind of a deeper conversation about how the visual and musical culture and really the arts in general are somehow the foundation stone for the building of an institution. I thought that was a really important discussion to have, because people really take it for granted. Like, you know, you say you're an artist or graphic designer, they're like, oh, that's nice. You know, that these things are really at the foundation of so many things we do. And you think about successful companies in the world, and they have this very strong identity as well. And it's not just about the brand. It's about the, you know, they're always talking about the corporate culture, right? Mm-hmm. The culture that you choose to. I think that's the important word too. Nikki, you want to hop in there?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we try to do with all the brands that brands I've developed in the Bahamas the last 20 years, is to really understand the key role that they perform. Mm. And it was interesting when we did the research for the university brand, because what we did with the survey was we outlined each of the brand elements of the COB logo. So we deconstructed it. We took the flamingo, we had the book, we had the yellow elder, we had the fact it was a circle, and we had the colors, and we had the motto. So we literally put them into questions, mm-hmm. you know, on a basis of 1 to 10. Can you recall these elements?
I was actually going to say, now that you said yellow elder, yes, I remember, but yes. I wouldn't have been the first one.
And that
for
was
me,
the
it was
least
always
recalled yep, yep, element the flamingo from the research. The so, flamingo.
Oh, right, it's on the side there, right?
You can see it, yeah. Yeah. The flamingo was the most recalled element from the logo. The colors were not favored, particularly. But the other interesting point was with the flamingo was that when we spoke with Dr. Keva Bethel, she personally felt very strongly connected to the flamingo being the symbol of that COB logo. So we took her thoughts into consideration as a part of the wider research, but it was really the fact that there was a connection existing there already. And this is what people don't really appreciate that goes into a logo or a visual identity is giving people that emotional connection. So it, like you say, it lasts for a lifetime. That's the job that it has to do. Yeah. But when you explain
and again
to people,
like reflect the culture of the institution it's representing, right? And I think Chris, you spoke very eloquently to that too. And I thought the words of, you know, again, there was a sort of coming together, working together, these sort of underscoring these positive elements. Now, this is a weird question. The color, the blue color, did you think about that while you were composing? Because, you know, I know some artists, you know, they see color when they hear music, or mathematicians will, you know, the creative people very often associate things that we might not associate with? Was that something, well, you talk about the sea and the meeting of those two oceans?
Well, I wasn't aware of it at all.
Okay.
So it's just like Andret's experience. It's just lightning struck at the right place.
Yeah. It's very interesting, though, how both of your experiences were sort of happenstance, but somehow tailored so well, because only just now, and that's why I said it, I was looking at the color and I was thinking about what you said about the glass window bridge and the way the two seas meet, and it seems to all be coming together. Keisha, I'm going to ask you a few questions now. I mean, you were there with all the branding exercises, but you're also like a very, you know, you're the program coordinator of the visual arts department. You're extremely important in the sort of visual arts, and from the commencement day, the charter day, there seemed to be, maybe it was just me because I was listening for it, because of course I do think the arts are key to everything, but it seemed to be there was a conscious decision to put the arts in a central position in terms of the building they're planning, and in terms of obviously there's other plans to develop many other areas, but it sounded like there is this growing awareness of how important visual arts, musical arts, performing arts are in a university environment. Can you speak to that?
Yes, I think both I and Justilian can speak to that, being a part of different conversations that we've had moving towards, during the transition and moving towards becoming the university. And I feel, yes, I agree with you. On Charter Day, it was made very clear that the university does have a we value the arts, and that is, you know, inclusive of performing arts, visual arts, so arts all around. And for the visual arts department, we see that as an opportunity now to really push, like we've been pushing, and we've been establishing relationships with other institutions in the educational sector or the private sector, but within the broader community. And this is something that falls in line with the university's vision, the mission of national development, of allowing for student governance, so the students are more empowered. And so we're trying now as a department to really focus on how we can not just create new relationships, but create more structured and meaningful relationships. Like, for instance, we have a relationship with the National Art Gallery. And so those relationships, we're trying to take advantage of the opportunity of having those connections and make them something meaningful for the students, the faculty, alumni, and even the staff. And so we are excited. I'm excited because the role as a program coordinator is fairly new to me.
We should do something for the staff at UB as well, actually, now that I think about it, because we've been focused very much on getting the students in. We should do things for the staff, because we should talk about that off air, because it is so important. My daughter asked me something the other day, and I thought it was very telling. And she's 13, she's at school, and our kids are fairly creative because, you know, and that's the house they grew up in. And she said, "Mommy, I don't understand. When you really are into the arts and you're good at that, you're still forced to do all the math and sciences. But when you're good at math and science, no one forces you to do the arts. Why is that?"
Which is interesting.
Right? Really, like, really deep question.
Yeah.
So is there any thought to, you know, usually at universities it's like a credit system to make even the science majors do a music class or do because I think that's where you find these very interesting cross pollinations, right?
Yes.
Someone who, and you look at a lot of contemporary art, and there's a lot of science coming in there now. And would there be a way to create these networks within the institution?
It wasn't always that way, because if you look at a lot of the professionals in our country today, most of them play the piano or went to the drama or dance. Somewhere along the way, this notion of the arts will not put bread on the table came into play, and we start discouraging our young people.
I think Andre can say something about that, right?
definitely. And it's so, not to cut you off, Chris, but it's so surreal, because I did like two semesters of COB.
Yeah.
And I was a police cadet at the time. My aunt, you know, family kind of directed me in that way.
Of course, that's a good job.
Criminology, exactly. Yeah. And I think Stan Burnside was the lecturer at COB. Now, when I did, I got like high marks at BJC and GC levels. I got distinctions in art. I was always like very artistic. So one day I see Stan and he's working at COB doing his thing. And I think art had just become an option. So I went home and I was like, "Mom, guess what? Hey, man, I want to be an artist." She was like, are you crazy?
She sat down sort of fanning herself, right?
An artist? Like, what are you going to do? You know what I mean? And I was like, but look, I mean, I got like, you know, I do this thing well. I enjoy this. I'm not going to pay my good money for you to do no art. And that was the end of it.
But that's interesting.
I'm serious.
We have a lot of that now at the university. We have a lot of students that it's not an official kind of like SEC general elective, which is what you were kind of suggesting.
Exactly.
But it's something that students opt for. So for instance, this semester I'm teaching a drawing class that I have art majors and non-art majors that are part of it. And sometimes those non-art majors, they are more committed and they're more, their creativity, because they're bringing something new to the table, a different perspective. It's very interesting to see what they produce. And so it is not formally a part of our programming, but it's something that students who know that they're able to take it as a class are open to. But we also have these new branches of learning that are available as well, which is a part of this vision of transitioning and now being a university, which is interdisciplinary, cross-disciplinary teaching.
Right, exactly.
And
well, that's sort of what I was getting at, too. Yeah.
And so we have this opportunity that's come our way as far as Expo 2020. I'm sure that both of you, Jocelyn and Amanda, are familiar with it, which is an opportunity for the Bahamas to create an art pavilion as part of Dubai's Expo in 2020. And the university has been engaging students under the leadership from what I'm aware of, it's Michael Edwards from the art department and Valeria Flax from the architecture department for students to work together, art students and architecture students to work together to create.
Yeah, which would be
this,
wonderful. Yeah.
Yes, and I think in the latter stages, because there's a culinary aspect, the culinary students will become a part of it as well. So things like that are very interesting. Something that, you know, as a college, we may not have even thought of to a certain extent, but now with the confidence that the title university brings, you just feel
it's a game changer. It's amazing. Yes. We were talking about that in the break too, just about how, you know, to be at the University of the Bahamas, it just brings a gravitas and a sense of pride that is.
We have so many students also that's opt to leave the Bahamas to study music, and you get a
and
first
art, and art history, and
we have such a talented crew of professors, if I may say. Dr. Paul Jones, who just joined us, doing a wonderful job with the choir. Of course, Audrey Dean Wright has been there for years. She laid a solid foundation for the choral program. Dr. Christine Gangelhoff, and we have the band has been growing steadily. The program, we've completed the writing of a bachelor's program that we're trying to get on stream now.
That's so important, because I keep saying, like, especially for us, you know, we have very often untrained people that come work at the NAGB. They're artists, they maybe have an associate's degree, they're interested in museum work because they think it might, but really it's like we're actually having to give them their university education while they're doing their job.
Right.
And then many are saving up to finish their BA or get their MA, and then we lose these people we've trained.
Right.
And then very often, I was just visiting in Canada and there was a former employee there, and I was like, so when are you coming home?
Yes.
Got a job for you.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, you know, now I'm here and I've made all these connections and I have all these opportunities.
Definitely.
And so, like, really, if we can, if we can provide
we can
that excellence of education here, which is what, for me, the university really represents, is the opportunity to not lose the young people.
The bright minds.
So that we then wait. I mean, in my case, it took me 30 years to get back home, because once you make
establish
that step,
roots.
You establish your roots, you get known in a certain community, you have a certain level of respect there, you make your network, whatever. And to leave that, It's hard.
Yes.
And
but
if we can keep them here, so I think that's really exciting. We have a BA program also in fine arts, right?
Yes.
Well, yeah, we're developing. I think the music department are a little bit ahead of us in that process. But yes, we are in the same train of thought. But I think with us, we are able to transition a lot of what is taught within the art education because they have a BA program, and transition our students that are part of our associates into our BA by allowing them to take those classes. So that is something we are excited about. And like music, we have a lot of other opportunities. You speak about training, and I think training students for their creative practice is very important. So I've tried to encourage students, as far as student engagement, to be a part of projects. We've been establishing relationships with, I guess, organizations like the Red Dress Soiree. They're having an upcoming event that's a charitable cause as it relates to the AIDS Foundation. And students were actually asked to create illustrations to be included in the magazine. Right. So for a lot of them, this is the first time that they would be published.
And I love that. I mean, I've seen that a lot in the mm-hmm. work. And since we've had the MOU, I've worked quite closely with you and Michael and, mm-hmm. and other people. And you know, I've spent more time at the college and I national plan as well, working on the national plan. Mm-hmm. I love to see how much you're bringing the students in. And Chris, you know, you spoke to having the COB students come over and do that first test that we listen to.
You need that.
You know, was university students. And I think that's so awesome. Good. And you know, you spoke to Valeria Flax and her students. And we've been on those meetings about this you know, planned art center, which will be a combination visual and musical performing arts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that the students are part of that process, are being asked to think about the building they'd like to see. The architecture students are actually coming with plans for this, you know, and I think mm-hmm. that's so exciting because it gives a certain amount of buy-in and empowerment mm-hmm. to this institution they're going to be a part of, right? Yeah.
One of the things that I was particularly excited about, both the president and the prime minister emphasized greatly the construction of Area 4 music and art, and I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah. We will remind them, won't
yes, we?
Sculpture. Look, Andre,
sculpture
we
being
had,
involved?
You know, we yeah. had, it will, because we, again, sculpture is mm-hmm. very often forgotten, mm-hmm. and it's
it
because
is,
it's difficult,
yes.
and it's the same at the institution, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't exhibit a lot of sculpture,
wow.
because it's just hard
it's
to bring in the building, and then we don't have a large storage area, so if we buy it, where do we put it when it's not actually on display? And sculptures, but we were in these meetings for the building, and we kept saying, what about like a really big freight elevator? And what about like the noise? Because if someone's got a chainsaw, and everyone was thinking, oh, art's just going to be people painting. And like, we're like, no, you got to keep that sculpture studio like far away from Chris's music studio.
Because you see the interest that Andre has that if we included sculpture, then he would have more of an interest to have even a tighter relationship with the
right,
institute, which he has now. He has a close relationship with the faculty and with the administration.
It's true that sculpture is very often...
Just a sidebar.
It's the hardest one to deal with, definitely,
from
in terms
a practical,
of physical
yeah,
space,
from a practical
in terms of practical, you know, that's
yeah.
why we, you know, we're trying to, you know, do with the sculpture gardens so we can commission works that stay permanently. Because, again, we have a few sculptures in the collection, but just getting them into the storage and back out of the storage is like, it's such a nightmare. And the heaviness very often.
Yeah.
We're in a 200-year-old building that, you know, if we have more than three heavy sculptures on one of those wooden floors, like...
Yeah, it could go through.
You know, it could be a problem. So those are kind of the things you have to think about. Mm-hmm. And Nikki wants to...
Yeah, not to mention design, advertising, marketing.
Of course.
I mean, that's so important for students to have these skills today. Social media, digital media.
Yeah.
All of that. So I'm hoping the university will address that.
Well, and I think actually when we speak to, I mean, Andre brought up that story that I think all of us probably had with all of our parents, right? You know, what do you mean you want to do art? We're all five professionals sitting here doing really well with good careers with awesome jobs that we love, right? And I think, you know, parents should just look to that. I mean, the doctors and the lawyers, you know, you see them in part of the course of your life every day. Mm-hmm. Somehow the art professionals were always somehow behind the scenes, right? Like we talked about, I mean, this whole show is about the foundation of the university. Mm-hmm. No one's going to be talking about, probably in 10 years, what you all, I mean, I hope they will be, but it will be about the courses and it will be about the people graduating. But it starts with the visual, it starts with the creative idea.
The foundation has to be there. And
you know?
It's a different time now that you can monetize anything today.
Yeah.
And, and creativity is what will separate us from other jobs in the future, because everything else is going to be automated at some point.
Good point.
The spirit that needs to be developed, because that will set you apart. So I think from what our parents may have thought is very different today. I mean,
well, it's a different world.
It's a different world. And I mean, like you talked about your 13, I have a 13-year-old daughter too, and she can create a video in 5 minutes that is of the standard that we were paying thousands and thousands of dollars for 10 years ago.
No, it's extraordinary. In fact, we just had a staff member go on a trip to Beijing to do some training, right? And I said, "Could you?" She got back, and I said, "Could you write a little something for the paper?" Because I don't know, but I've made a film.
Right.
And, you know, she just said it like, "Oh yeah, you know, I shot this thing and I edited it, and it's that's you know, like I made a film,"
skills.
And I was like, "Wow!"
Yeah. Economy, I think that's something that Royan Dean pushes a lot of, and we had different talks at the NHEB concerning that creative economy. Pamela Burnside as well. Creative economy is where it's at as far as sustainability as a country. That's what we have to offer. That you know, it's ingrained in our culture and our spirit.
Well, and hopefully UB is going to be then the right? The guiding lights.
The creative hub.
The guiding light.
To set everybody on their way.
Well, I want to take this opportunity to invite persons to come out on December 4th. We're having a Christmas concert.
Yay! Fantastic.
As first Christmas concert at the University of the Bahamas. The choir and the band is going to put on a spectacular performance. It's going to be at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay, that's on Sunday.
Yes. Please come out and support the students. And this, the funds raised will be going towards a planned trip for the band and choir to expose our students.
Well, I think that's great because, again, I think something that's been lacking is, again, all the news and sort of public engagement about COB always seem to be, you know, oh, they're not charging more for parking. And I think that would be something to invite the outside in, and that these kind of things are great.
Yes.
So December, Sunday 4th at 4 p.m.
Yes.
In the Performing Arts Center.
In the Performing Arts Center, right on at the university's campus.
Fantastic.
And in addition to that, I'd like to remind those persons who are interested in music, we do have a minor in music, that students that are doing other areas, if they wish to engage and they started music probably in the high schools and want to continue, a lot of the students, nurse students, business students, whatever area, they've been opting to take a minor in music.
Well, I think that's fantastic because, again, it's combining you know, those things of, I mean, I love the idea of a nurse and music.
Showing because hybrid nature.
Exactly, the hybrid nature, but also, again, you know, the brain has two sides and both sides need to be stimulated. Yeah. And if you want to be the best nurse ever, probably playing the clarinet on the side is going to help you.
Definitely.
Sure. Right?
Definitely, yes.
So, anyhow, unfortunately, that could be a whole other show. And so maybe we'll regroup and do that, but it's come to the end of our time together. So I want to thank all four of you for coming to the studio tonight. So we heard tonight from Andrette John, the visual artist who designed the mace for the University of the Bahamas. Chris Justillian, the head of visual and performing arts and assistant professor at the University of the Bahamas, who wrote the alma mater, which is the university hymn. We heard from Keisha Oliver, assistant professor and program coordinator of visual arts at University of the Bahamas. Thank you so much. And Nikki Saddleton, the vice president of communications for Tegra Solutions, that was the company that came up with the branding. So I want to thank you all so much for being here tonight. I hope to hear much more from you and to follow the progression of the University of the Bahamas moving into the future. You've been listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you've been listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Thank you so much for listening, and good night.